Can you remember a time in your life when you experienced glory? What was that like? What colors do you remember? What sights or smells? Did that feeling come with joy or fear or an incomprehensible mix of both? Were you immediately aware that God was there, or was that too intellectual for the moment? Did the godness of it come to you after the fact, after you analyzed it in your memory? As I was thinking about how I would answer this question for myself, I was trying to remember moments of mountains and lakes and vast desert valleys, stories somewhat like the mountain stories we heard today. And if you know anything about me, you know that that's probably where my brain would go, since I love to travel and hike and bike and camp. And I have experienced glory in these places and known that God was there. But as I thought about this question, the moment that wanted my attention had nothing to do with mountains or canyons. It was way back, almost more than 10 years ago now, in 2008, when I moved across the world to study at the University of Ghana in Lagos. For a semester, I learned about West African literature and language and religion and history. And though I was studying, the most valuable time that I spent there was the time spent building friendships with the other students. I remember distinctly a moment when we were all crammed into someone's dorm room, sort of only a little bit watching a game of football, soccer, on the television. And we were all just laughing and joking and teasing each other. These people were all from all over the world, Americans, Nigerians, Ghanaians, Egypt, Lebanon, Botswana, China. And in that moment, there was nothing more important than just being together. All of these friendships seemed magical to me, endlessly fascinating people with endlessly fascinating stories to tell, with joys and wonders and loves and frustrations and nerderies. And we had nothing better to do than just be friends for a little while. I remember this feeling of lightness, like I was soaring somewhere, like something inside of me had just been set free. For me, that was a moment of God's glory shining through. Glory was a genderless friendship. Humans simply relating to each other across wildly different experiences. Glory was having nothing better to do than to be together and to enjoy each other's souls. We read the story of the Transfiguration as a way to connect us with a moment when God's glory was present to the disciples. We remember how glory showed up for them, to remember how glory shows up for us, and to allow ourselves to learn from that glory, from God, from these mountaintop experiences. We always read this story right before Lent begins, as a kind of anchor point for our walk towards the cross. Lent begins a time of difficult introspection, when we come face to face with our own brokenness, both as individuals and as communities. This year especially, we will be spending time focusing on creation care and how the way of Jesus calls us to meet the realities of climate change. This is going to be difficult work, work that will ask us to face a truly existential threat that our own sin has created, and to approach it with deep honesty and Christian hope. Anchor stories of God's transformative presence, like this one, help us to remember why we are doing the difficult work, why we can trust the God who puts a mirror up against our own soul. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all tell the story of the Transfiguration. In it, Jesus goes up on a mountain, like Moses once did, and encounters God. His clothes and his face are dazzling white, like Moses's once was. And suddenly, that great lawgiver appears and is speaking with him, as well as Elijah, the greatest prophet of the Jewish people. It might be hard for us to understand the significance of this for Peter, James, and John. To them, this would be absolute and definitive proof that Jesus is the Messiah, that everything they have been hoping for in the absolute core of their being is true. To us, it reminds us that Jesus' story does not come in a vacuum, that he comes with his own Jewish identity, his Jewish story, his own spiritual ancestry. And every time I approach this story, it seems to be Peter who is my teacher. Matthew's version of the story is much more generous towards Peter. I usually imagine him tripping over himself, terrified and overeager, choking out the words, "Let us build three dwellings." Nobody in English says dwellings when they're not thinking. But in Matthew, he's more composed, and it gives us a chance to actually look at what he's asking. The word dwelling is actually important. It's the word for tent. And this is the exact same word that is used to describe the tabernacle, the tent, where God lives among the people of Israel. So Peter is actually offering hospitality to these guests in a totally appropriate way. Like his ancestors before him, he wants to notice that God is here and invite God to stay. The last time God showed up on a mountain to Moses, God actually did say, "Now build me a tent and make it look like this." So Peter's not that off base in this moment. But this time, as usual, God has a different story to write. Building a tent, even when offered out of hospitality, is an attempt to control this moment, an attempt to contain the glory. God says, "This is my son, my beloved. Listen to him." In so many words, he says, "You do not have control over this moment, Peter. God is already walking among you. So pay attention to that. Not just this moment on the mountain." Then Jesus reaches out to touch them. This portion of the story is unique to Matthew's telling. Jesus, in his transfigurated state, is not just separate and away from them, distant because of this glory. Instead, he is showing them compassion through regular human touch. "Get up and do not be afraid," he says, almost gently. They look up, but suddenly it is all over, and they must go down from the mountain, knowing what they know and living out this strange promise in the real world. I think we all react a little bit like Peter to moments of glory. His attempt to build tents for these mysterious guests comes from a place of terror, a place of hospitality, and a desire to contain and control, to keep it. It is a perfectly human mix of confused motivations. But in the end, like Peter, we always learn that we cannot contain glory. The only real response to this glory is not to hold on to it, not to build a house for it, but to go down the mountain and to give it away. We do this through our relationships, through our healing work, through living out the good news. If we try to hold on to our moments of glory, they disappear, they become distant, they stop making sense. Instead, our call is to give this glory away, to live out of it and to pour it into our lives down below the mountaintop. This is what these disciples do next. And it isn't easy to follow Jesus into that work. Jesus will give that glory away so recklessly that it gets him killed. For us here today, this is the most important lesson from the story of the Transfiguration. God's glory is not for us to contain or to build a house around. It is for us to give away, to live into by walking with Jesus, not only on the mountaintop, but down in the streets, in our schools and in our workplaces, in our families and our friendships, with strangers and with neighbors that we've never noticed before. And when the going becomes difficult, and this God holds a mirror up to our souls, we must look with honesty and hope. We know that we can trust this God because we know this story of God's promise to be with us, to reach out and call to us when we are afraid, to walk among us and to show us what it means to live in a new way. Amen.